The Antidote welcomes Ben Bork of Charming to the Last to The Antidote. Ben, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Charming to the Last has a relatively short history. I mean, your debut release, It's the Little Things, came out just 4 years ago. But you must have been involved in music before then.
I was involved in music through church mostly, just playing on the worship bands. It's why I learned guitar in the first place when I was about 19. Just enough chords to play along, which it doesn't take too many, but that was my history with music before this. But I always wanted to record and dive into that side of things.
You're certainly not doing worship music with this project.
No.
Well, the title of that album, It's the Little Things, really was a misnomer because it wasn't little at all. I mean, it was an 11-song album.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious as to why you took the album route. Wouldn't it have been simpler to release just a song or two at a time and test the waters?
Yes, it would have been simpler. I've just always loved, I would buy CDs and pull the jacket out of them and sit and listen and read through all the lyrics at the same time. And I even ordered physical CDs for that release just to have that feel of creating an album, something that I've always wanted to do. So it was like a dream of mine and a goal of mine and Alex's at the time.
Do you think it's a negative now to everything digitally instead of CD?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's certainly easier to get it to people, but I really do miss that tangible physical CD to just have on the shelf, open up and play and just sit and listen through the whole thing. I miss that for sure.
Of course, everything old is new again. Everybody does vinyl. And
yes,
also
that's
the latest kick is doing recordings on cassette.
Ah, I could get into that.
That's for the next album.
Yeah, for sure. We'll release it on cassette.
Well, I found that one of the winners from It's the Little Things is These Moments.
Mm.
And it's the sweet love song. My love for you was so automatic. As soon as we met, you filled my mind. When we talked, you would cut through the static. 10 years have passed and you're still mine. So You got to tell me, how many points did your wife give you for that one?
Oh, that was a big one. She liked that one. Alex wrote that composition. So he had it in that 3-4 time, kind of that swingy feel. Sound like a Renaissance fair, but I loved it. And it felt like a love song. And yeah, at the time I'd been married for 10 years. So now it's been 14. And it's pretty easy to write about my wife. She's awesome.
Now you're just an old middle-aged guy.
Well, I'm 36. So maybe, depending on how long I live, might be middle-aged, but I still feel young.
Good stuff. That debut was a DIY effort. Did that make it difficult to piece it together?
Well, Alex did a lot of the heavy lifting on that one. So he lives out in Ontario in Kingston, and we've been friends since middle school. So he had a band of his own, recorded a couple EPs, and so he had the knowledge to get us going. And we were just chatting one night, and he said he wanted to work on a project, and he wasn't going to be the one singing on it or anything. So he roped me in, and I'm glad he did, because I kind of fell in love with the whole process.
So this project really was his idea?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Besides being vocalist, what other duties did you have with the band?
We probably did about half and half writing the compositions on that album, and then I wrote the lyrics, and he pieced it all together. At the time, I didn't know. I mean, I had tinkered with stuff, but I had no idea how he was doing it, so I've learned a lot since then.
What about nowadays? Are you still doing everything independently? I mean, most of the artists I meet with, you know, at least they want the help of a producer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no producer. No, I have it all in my basement here. So it's really the only way that I'm able to work on it, because I mean, my schedule is pretty tight. I have a full-time job and 2 kids. So I run back and forth to my other computer to record something or to mix something or just piece something together that's on my mind. And if it wasn't for that accessibility, I certainly wouldn't have the time to keep making these songs.
How much time does it actually take you?
It does take me a while. My guitar skills are lacking. So I had, on the second album, I had my friend Christian Monteith on it. And he's one of those guys that he sits down and he just feels the song, plays it out, doesn't need to practice or anything. He just knows what he's doing. He's had a guitar in his hand since he was, I don't know, 12 or 13 probably. But for me, I have to sit down and figure it all out and try a few different ways. So it does take me longer when I'm by myself. But
don't you hate people like that? There's no hesitation. They just dive right in and it's perfect every time.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'll ask him, like, I'll do the solo with my mouth. It'd be like something like this. And then he'll just rip a crazy solo. And he's just like, how does that sound? I'm like, man, get out of here.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Now, These Moments wasn't the only love song on It's the Little Things. You released Orion. That speaks about your young son, I'm guessing.
Yes.
I think every dad can relate to that, even if the song really is a tearjerker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have two boys, and they're both very different. So their songs reflect their personalities. But my older son is a kind of quieter, a deep thinker. I say quieter only because the other one is wild. But yeah, so the style of the song suits him. And it was, of course, a life-changing moment to have a child.
Even more of a life-changing moment the more kids that you add.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think it's difficult, and then you have another, and you're like, why did I ever complain about anything? Because this is too much.
Are these going to be future bandmates?
Yeah, you never know. They're into sports, which I never was, but maybe we'll try to steer them to an instrument one of these days.
Then what kept you occupied as a kid if it wasn't sports?
Oh, video games for the most part. I grew up just loving video games, was obsessed with them. And Star Wars, which is where the band name actually comes from. It's a quote from A New Hope. Yeah.
So now I don't have to ask about that.
No. Yeah. Well, I'm still afraid Disney's going to shut us down at some point. But yeah, Alex and I were really into video games. And it's actually how we keep in touch. These days we play probably once every couple months and just catch up, and it's just nice to be able to stay in touch that way.
I got to tell you that I was doing a bit of info hunting about you and found out that you come from a military family.
Mm-hmm.
With you being from New Brunswick, I'm going to go on a limb here. Does that mean you were living in Oromocto?
Yes. So that is where Alex and I met. It was, I guess, my dad's longest posting. So we were there for 6 years, I believe, and then moved to Manitoba, and then my dad retired out here, so I just came with them.
And you stayed put?
Yes. It's been my favorite place by far.
That town is just outside of Fredericton. Mm-hmm. Years ago, I was there for a radio conference, so I know Fredericton has a pretty significant music scene.
Yes.
Did that type of community play an influence on Charming to the Last?
No, I wouldn't say so. It definitely does have an incredible music scene. I mean, they have their Harvest Jazz and Blues Festival every year, so very, very bluesy. A lot of country lovers, which is not my genre of choice, but there is certainly a lot of grants and programs that are accessible, and I took advantage of some of those when we were working on the albums to just give us a little boost in marketing and the production of the CDs and stuff like that.
In 2022, Charming to the Last released your sophomore album, A Single Spark. You went full bore and you made that into a concept album.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since you're the creator and music is personal, how much of that album is your own story?
That is a good question, and this will probably be a long answer, but I started writing that. I had the concept of the prodigal son story, and just trying to like modernize it and contextualize it in how we talk and are today. I wrote most of it during the pandemic, and it was obviously very challenging for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that a lot of my writing was revolved around cycles. Like there were times where I was very frustrated with how things were going. There were times where I felt alone. There were times where I felt like just running away. Just like all these feelings of everything happening all at once. So it sort of went from that prodigal son arc to more of a personal story of like the mental struggles during that time. Like some days would be totally fine, and those were the sunnier songs. Some days would be very challenging, and those are the ones where it gets a little darker, or the person in the story literally runs away. But in my mind, it was just, it was kind of like a brain escape. And then it all kind of comes together at the end with just a kind of a more straightforward acoustic track that's somewhat outside of the story. I liked that ending because I had this big grand finale and it just, nothing ever fit. And I didn't like how, like, it was kind of cheesy and trying too hard to make a point or be epic or whatever. So I ended up with just that acoustic track that starts with a sigh, and that's my favorite on the album, I think.
That song is?
I've forgotten it as well. Oh, man. I've Got This Figured Out. I think that's what it's called, which is ironic.
I've Got This Figured Out.
Yeah.
But then how did people react to this song? I mean, it was out of character with the rest of the album.
Yeah, I had a lot of people ask me if I was okay after releasing that, which was interesting. But I don't know. I guess I've always been quieter growing up. Didn't really put myself out there a lot. So when I did put myself out there in the form of this art, I guess, it just had people wondering if that's how I was thinking or if my thoughts were on the darker side of things or whatever. But it really was just an expression of how I was feeling at the time. And I'm glad that I got it out there, but it was also nice to work on the latest album with a more positive and upbeat hook.
Let me pull in a song that came up earlier in that album. Bury Me says, "Yeah, I know that I'm a liar. Just know that I'm still broken. I swear I wanted to change, if that means anything. I swear I wanted to change." I can relate to that because, you know, I hate change. Mm-hmm. I love sticking to my routine, even though that annoys my wife. How are you with handling change?
Well, I guess I've gotten pretty good at it over the years because we moved every 3 or 4 years. So that's quite a change. Growing up, meeting new people, making new friends. It did get harder as I got older, and I do find that I still look for that permanence in things. If we got a good thing going, want to keep it that way kind of thing. So yes, definitely a fan of routine and stability.
Ordinary Miracles comes from last year's EP, Steady As She Goes. It's a song that shares about where you stand with your faith when it says, "I want to see the miracles in the everyday. All I see are highlights as I scroll by." These pictures and stories turn to static. The constant movement is an illusion that only ever makes us feel inadequate. God help me refocus my perspective, because I have everything I need. Do you personally find it difficult to stay centered on Christ?
Yes, I find that it's interesting because that song and another one on that album, the other one being quite a bit heavier, they both kind of deal with the same thing, which is, I guess, like the internet culture and doom scrolling and all that, whatever the latest term is. But I find it so easy to just get caught up in that, just scrolling and being fed like nonsense all day, basically, if you get yourself hooked on it. So yes, one of them is from the perspective of just saying there's all these lies out there all the time and everybody's being told what they want to hear because of the algorithms and all that stuff. And then there's another one, Ordinary Miracles, that is just, hey, let's focus on what's important. There are miracles in the everyday if you're looking for them. Yeah, that's where that song comes from.
It's difficult sometimes to discover or to discern that these really are miracles that you're experiencing or seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And it's easy to just move from one problem to the next, especially with the kids and school and sports and sicknesses and all these things that come up. But sometimes you look back and you think, oh, we were dealing with a really large problem last year that just doesn't even exist anymore. And that's a reason to celebrate and be thankful and just always have that idea of gratitude kind of front and center.
Absolutely. I think it was about a month ago that you sent me the entire Charming to the Last discography.
Mm-hmm.
You sent almost all of it because you held back one song, and it's a single titled Battlefield.
Oh, yeah.
Something I'm curious about is why you didn't happen to include it on the new album, Stick the Landing.
That's a good question. So that song I wrote with Alex, probably 12, 13 years ago, and we recorded a version of it. So this was kind of just like a modernized recording now that I know more of what I'm doing with mixing and all that stuff. So I was going to put it on an EP, and then the EP turned into an album, and then I didn't find that it fit the album. So it might end up on a future EP, or I might just leave it hanging there as a single.
The funny thing is, that released almost exactly a month earlier from the album release date.
Yeah, that's right.
But you're right, it is different from the rest of the new album. I guess we should really get into that. Charming to the Last did go through a major change with Stick the Landing. You went solo. So what happened with Alex?
So Alex is very busy. He has 3 kids and 2 jobs. And I keep trying to rope him back in even for a single, but I obviously don't want to push him. He's got a lot going on, but we still keep in touch, and I hope that we'll be able to work on something soon. And same with Christian. So I had Christian on album 2, and any super fancy guitar work you hear on that is from him, and he played the bass as well. So he, like I said, he's one of those guys that just sits and nails tracks in his first take, so I'm also hoping to rope him back in on the next one.
You should have played the guilt card with Alex. After all, you guys are best friends.
True. How can he choose his family over me?
Exactly.
They came after. I was there first.
Well, one of the songs that I adore from the album is As You Are. Probably because it reminds me so much of the band May. But I guess that's sort of beside the point. The song speaks about distractions and taking back control. And it also says, they think they're so clever, fighting for a minute of your time. But really, isn't that true of any form of media? I mean, even including your band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, that's true. First of all, the fact that to even be compared with May is incredible because the Everglow is like my all-time favorite album.
Well, it's the greatest concept album of all time.
It's incredible. Every song is just perfect. But we actually danced to the opening song at my wedding. So that's my May story. But yes, it's true that we're always, I mean, you turn on your smart TV now and you have 15 ads for different apps and streaming, and you just can't escape the constant choices that we're given. But yeah, that song came from, it was a conversation with somebody whose son was going through something pretty severe, and just I had gone through something similar in my early 20s of kind of that quarter life crisis, I guess they call it. But yeah, just that idea that we need to be in community, we need to be with each other. Isolation is where you get stuck with being fed whatever you're looking into or reading or watching. So that's where that song came from.
Something that I find interesting about Charming to the Last is your style. Because when I first heard your music, I thought, okay, this band's making pop punk. But then another song comes up and it was indie rock. And then that was followed by a pop song. Is diversity the key to Charming to the Last?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, my first love was pop punk. I heard Maybe It's Maybelline by Reliant K on a late night Christian radio show back in the day. And I was hooked. I just was like, how can music get any better than this? So I definitely have a deep love for pop punk. this album was a bit more of a throwback. Stick the Landing was more of like that early 2000s pop punk feel, but I do also want to keep things moving forward and not always just recreating the songs that I love.
The interesting thing about pop punk is that there's really a big resurgence in that.
Yes, it's true. Yeah, I was actually just at a, well, not just, but at a Sum 41 concert. And I mean, all the songs they played beforehand were all Blink 182 and I guess a few Billy Talent. But yeah, just there's a lot, the whole crowd singing along to the songs they're playing before the band even comes up. So people still love it.
I find that much of Stick the Landing seems to share about you going through a learning curve, like Noise and Shadows. I struggle to trust what I believe. Nothing ventured, nothing lost. I write it off as man-made pageantry, so I don't have to carry my cross.
Mm. Yeah, that comes from a conversation with my brother. My brother's always been the one that I looked up to for like his rock-solid faith. I always felt that he had it all together with that. And I was always on the fence where, like, I wanted to believe. I went to church my whole life. It was like, I knew the verses, everything was in my head, but there's just always something, some part of me that was like, but it's not real, right? Mm. Like, you know, it's not real. So I was always kind of wrestling with that and felt like I was pretending when I would be like, no, I'm all for this. And I believe, and I'm just all for God. Yeah, it felt like I was performing because of what had grown up around my whole life. So this song is kind of reconciling that to where I am now, which is in a much better place and where I do feel like I can recognize God moving in my life and kind of connecting my mind and heart in a way that I understand a lot more instead of just kind of rehearsing what I've heard.
No, that's interesting. When you got into putting together Stick the Landing, did you have a certain premise or thoughts that you wanted to bring out specifically on the album?
Yeah, I did want to take a more faith-based approach. So that was intentional on this one. And it's interesting, on the way to that Sum 41 concert, I had a friend with me who was all into every new band. He just knows all the new music and stuff. And he's playing me these songs and I'm like, man, these are heavy. And even all the pop punk stuff, the production's modern, but it's still that feel. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, these are so dark and like nihilistic. And it's just interesting to hear. It's kind of like the current voice in the scene. So not that we didn't have that back in the day either, but it was just so prevalent with all these new songs. So I just kind of made the conscious choice on that drive to put something positive out there. In the style that I love.
Well, there is one song that maybe isn't quite so positive. I understand where you're going on the song, Where Is My Hope? It says, is anyone listening? Does anyone care? Or do I obsess over songs that no one ever hears? Should it matter if we've got fans or not? Sometimes it feels like this is all that I've got. Well, something that I find unfair is that Charming to the Last hasn't made it to the big time.
Mm.
Because you have everything. You've got the voice, the music, and the lyrics. So here's a question for you. What if you were offered a decent record deal and a world tour? Would you actually go for it?
Well, first of all, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't know. I would talk to my wife about it. We would look at what our lives are now and what we could see them being. I just love recording, but I do definitely wrestle with the amount of space it takes up in my brain where I'm like, I could just kind of flush this all out and be like, I don't need to release this because there's no timeline, there's no contract. But I just love it. I guess it's fulfilling for me. So that is kind of what it comes down to. But I also think that the faith-based approach on this last album has helped ease that a little bit, where I feel like there's maybe more purpose behind it than just kind of, here, look what I can do.
Well, my thoughts on your discography is that you often find faith in Christ in the songs. But it's maybe a little bit more in the background, but it's still there.
That's good. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I remember when Jesus Freak Hideout, which is a site I've been visiting since I was 15, they reviewed the second album and stated that there was no hope in the lyrics. I was a little surprised by that, but I reached out and just kind of explained the story behind it so they understood where I was coming from on it. But I'm glad to hear you say that because I don't feel like they were completely hopeless.
Definitely not. Now, there's something really, really important that I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Who determines if Charming to the Last actually is charming?
Ooh, well, since it's just me, I guess my wife.
I want to thank you, Ben, for joining The Antidote. I really appreciate this.
This was awesome. Thanks for having me.